Now, a mass shooting at a 4th of July parade in Highland Park, Illinois on Monday left 7 people dead, more than 3 dozen injured. Police say a 21-year-old has confessed to the killings and that he used a Smith & Wesson M&P-15, which he bought legally, along with several other firearms. Earlier today, the Lake County Sheriff's Department also said in a press conference that the alleged perpetrator then drove to Madison and considered further violence.
Investigators did develop some information that it appears when he drove to Madison, he was driving around. However, he did see a celebration that was occurring in Madison, and he seriously contemplated using the firearm he had in his vehicle to commit another shooting.
In Madison.
Did you know how much ammunition he had at that point?
Approximately 60 rounds.
Since the shooting, Vice President Harris called on Congress to bring back a federal ban on assault weapon sales. The country did ban the sale of many firearms designated as assault weapons in a law passed in 1994. It was designated as a 10-year law and expired in 2004. How effective was that ban in reducing mass violence, if at all? Are there other ways we can make tragedies like the Highland Park shooting more preventable, less deadly? You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the idea of a new assault weapons ban? Or how about more specific things like limiting the amount of ammunition in magazines? If you're a firearm owner, what are your thoughts on the availability of these weapons? Are there regulations you would be okay with? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. James Allen Fox is the Lippman Family Professor of Criminology, Law, and Public Policy at Northeastern University and a regular contributor for USA Today. He's written many books on violence and criminology and maintains a mass killing database with Northeastern University, USA Today, and the AP. James, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you, Rob.
Take us back to 1994. What regulations were put in place? How are these assault weapons, I guess, defined as a category?
Well, the term assault, there's no set definition of assault weapon. It can be defined in any way you want, and it's really, in terms of practice, defined by legislation. The 1994 law essentially listed particular weapons that were to be outlawed. It's really what's about the thing about assault weapons is what's attached to them, in particular things like a large capacity magazine that makes them deadly, or the fact that if it can accept a silencer. That's sort of what the functionally what is the concern, not the fact that it's just a rifle otherwise.
What I know, there's been a lot of research trying to figure out if that ban made much difference. It seems like maybe not. What do you see when you look back at that 10-year span that this ban was in place?
I see largely not, although there's some difference of opinions in terms of data. But mass shootings did not decline during that ban. It's hard to tell for sure because there are a lot of other factors that affect mass shootings. But the thing is that the vast majority of the mass shootings involve handguns, actually, not rifles or assault weapons. And that's one of the problems. Plus, there were plenty of so-called assault weapons in circulation already. Even though the sale was banned, that doesn't mean they couldn't be traded or sold privately. So the effect was minimal at best.
Now, if a new ban were to be put in place, it seems like in a lot of ways we have a lot more of these weapons out in the public already. Do you think that might make it even less effective to try to reimpose something like that 94 ban today?
Well, I think whatever we do would be a good idea, but we have to have realistic expectations as to what effect it might have. As you say, there are plenty of them already in circulation, and there's no talk about a buyback or confiscation of these weapons, only perhaps that they wouldn't be sold going forward. But again, it all depends on how you define an assault weapon. For example, two of the largest mass shootings in our history were committed with handguns. The Virginia Tech shooting of 32 and the shooting in Luby's Cafeteria in Texas back in 1991 with 23 were killed. Those were committed with a Glock handgun, but a Glock that was fashioned with a large capacity magazine. So it's not so much the rifle or the gun, it's the attachment. So, in fact, we recently completed research we published last year looking at what state laws had with regard to guns and the rate of mass shootings in state by state. And we found there were two things, the two laws that made a difference in terms of the rate or lethality of mass shootings. One is permits to purchase, which is different than a universal background check. Universal background check really just means that private sales as well would go through the FBI's background check. A permit to purchase allows local agencies, such as police departments, to make decisions about the suitability of someone to give them a permit based on far more information than just whether they have a criminal record, a felony record, or whether they've been institutionalized involuntarily. We found that states that have permits to purchase have significantly lower incidence of mass shootings. Secondly, states that had bans on large capacity magazines had significantly lower casualty counts, both deaths and injuries, when there was a mass shooting. So there are things we can do to reduce the likelihood, and in particular, the severity of mass shootings when they occur.
Is that something you think could be effective at the federal level? You were just talking about state laws there.
Sure, it could. The question is whether it could pass. But states that have the will and have enacted these restrictions, it has made a difference.
Talking to James Allen Fox, criminology professor at Northeastern University, looking at gun regulations, especially ones related to mass shootings, what works, what doesn't, what is possible. You can join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in a caller now. John is with us in Stevenson, Michigan. Hi, John.
Hey, listen, I'm a hunter safety instructor now for about 16 years. And in the sporting field, like when we go deer hunting, it's the law. We can have no more than 5 rounds in our weapon or our deer rifle. If we get caught with more, we get a fine. Or if we're waterfowl hunting, we can have no more than 3 rounds in that shotgun. If we get caught with more in those, DNR will give us a fine. So in seeing how we protect the wildlife so well, should we limit the magazine capacity for those other types of weapons, like the assault weapons? Let's limit them to 5 like they limit the sportsmen's to 5. I think that should be a good way to go without having to totally, get away with that type of weapon. Limit the magazines.
John, thanks for the call. James, what do you think?
Well, I would agree. I'm not sure we would see it with 5, but the states that have these bans usually set a limit at 10. But I certainly agree. You know, there on the market, you can buy the drum magazines that hold 100 rounds. It's amazing what capacity someone can have. So, and also point out that the Second Amendment says nothing about the amount of ammunition one can have. So it's not a violation of the Second Amendment to implement a ban. One thing I also want to point out, you said something at the end about what the federal government can do as opposed to states. The federal government is sort of the lowest common denominator. In fact, it is pretty low in terms of the federal law. And states can do a lot better. And many of them have.
Thanks for that call, John, at 800-642-1234. I want to listen to a comment here from Dr. David Baum from Highland Park, Illinois. He was on the scene treating victims just after the shooting, talking about the impact, the lethality of the firearm involved. Here's what he had to say talking to CNN.
The horrific scene of some of the bodies is unspeakable for the average person. I mean, having been a physician, I've seen things in ERs, and you do see lots of blood, but the bodies were literally, some of the bodies were, there was an evisceration injury from the power of this gun and the bullets. There was another person who had an unspeakable head injury. Unspeakable. So these are the bullets and guns that 18-year-olds have a right to shoot down on a parade in a sleepy little community July 4th parade.
James, I've seen similar comments from surgeons and others who have worked on shooting victims from AR-15 style rifles. There's a concern that these these armaments are really efficient at transmitting the energy from the ammunition into the human body. Is there something about the lethality of a particular type of firearm that could be regulatable?
Well, I don't know. That would be a very difficult law to pass. You have to define lethality. But one thing I want to say, based on the comment about 18-year-olds, I was disappointed that in the federal law that we did not see the minimum age for purchasing a long gun, which includes an AR-15, raised to 21, which is the same age that is the minimum for a handgun. The idea that we're going to have enhanced background checks looking at juvenile records as well, I'm not sure how much that's going to do. Because, you know, most mass shooters do not have a criminal record, either juvenile or adult. Their first crime is the massacre. So I'm not sure that kind of enhanced background check will get at the issue. The problem is that 18-year-olds are too impulsive. We know that. We know a lot about brain development, and certainly the portion of the brain that controls your ability to think things through and to make good decisions doesn't develop actually until age 25. The irony is, you know, you could have an 18-year-old who takes an AR-15 that he purchases legally, go into a liquor store, hold up the liquor store, not for the cash, but for the beer that he can't buy legally.
We're talking to James Allen Fox, professor of criminology, law, and public policy at Northeastern University, about calls for some kind of new assault weapons ban after Monday's shooting in Illinois, and what the data tells us about gun violence and what works to prevent mass shootings. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your questions for our guest. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation, take some more of your calls coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We're picking up our talk with James Allen Fox, criminologist at Northeastern University, looking at the idea of an assault weapons ban that's been backed by President Biden and other measures aimed at reducing gun violence. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Joe is with us in Warrens. Joe, hi.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Good. What'd you want to bring up, Joe?
Well, I understand all the problems that they have with the guns and stuff. I'm from a long line of family hunters and shooters and stuff. I teach hunter safety. I teach pellet rifle, archery, shotgun, .22, and we teach safety and stuff. And what I'm trying to say is I could have, earlier I told a lady, I could have a 100-round magazine laying on the table, and if nobody ever touched it, that gun would never hurt anybody, whether it had one round or 100 rounds. I think we need to do way more background checks on the people, and especially they seem to be younger people that like to be doing this, or not like to be doing it, but they're doing it. I think there's a lot of safety that's going on out there. I know people that have, between my son and I, we probably got over 60, 70 guns. And we have yet to ever have a problem, and it's just because we teach the hunter safety and the people, we think about everything that's going on. So I don't know if there's mental problems out there that need to be dealt with, but I don't think you're going to try to take the guns and delimit people on anything that they can own by doing a gun ban.
Joe, thanks a lot for the call. James, you gave us a lot to work with there. Take it where you
sure.
want to go.
Well, you know, people always say we want to keep dangerous guns out of the hands of dangerous individuals, but that's far more easy to say than to do. One, how do we define someone who's dangerous? That's complicated. You know, let me talk for a moment about red flag laws, which has, of course, become popular in the wake of mass shootings. All the red flag laws that we have in this country have been motivated by homicides, the first one being Indiana that followed a homicide of a police officer, second one being Connecticut following the Sandy Hook shooting, and a lot of them following Parkland shooting. And the evidence, the research evidence about the effectiveness shows that it has an effect on suicide. But there has been no evidence, no research actually, on the impact on homicide. And, you know, it's easy to say we need a red flag law, but one has to be very careful, because if someone's homicidal and you attempt to take away their gun, We have to do it very carefully and with all the rights that they should have, because if someone's homicidal, that attempt to confiscate their gun against their will can actually be the very act that could set off what we don't want to happen.
Thanks for that call. We'll go next to Yordis in Colfax. Yordis, hi.
Hello. I think this is an emergency situation. Obviously, over 300 mass murders in this country so far this year. And I'm suggesting that police officers join with nurses and doctors and first responders and threaten to strike and say, we will not continue working until you change these laws. They are the ones that are seeing these horrors, these war zones in our country. And I have so much respect for them, but they shouldn't have to see that. They shouldn't have to be in a war zone in their own country. Thank you.
Yordis, thanks for the call. James, the risk to police officers, one read on what happened in Uvalde, Texas, was police officers felt outgunned as they were out in the hallway of the school there.
Yeah, well, there are lots of issues with Uvalde in terms of their response.
Sure.
They did not follow the proper protocols. Let me say something about what the caller just said. Mm-hmm. He said there had been 300 mass murders this year. That's not true. It depends how you define a mass shooting. See, the 300 is 400 people shot, but not necessarily killed. In fact, in those 300, about 260 deaths have occurred. Most mass shootings don't even have any deaths. What I study is mass killings, 400 people killed. And so far we've had 15 this year. So there's no real epidemic here, although there is an epidemic of fear. And there's an exaggerated sense of what the likelihood is. These are rare events, often when they occur, but still, they are rare. That doesn't mean we shouldn't do anything about it. It is a problem. It's just not an epidemic.
Yordis, thanks for the call. Jimmy joins us next in Valley Junction. Jimmy, hi.
Afternoon, gents. Yeah, I think you're on to something with the limitation on the magazine size. I've got a 30-06 semi-automatic I use for deer hunting, and of course it only holds 5 rounds, and I don't see the need, for my purposes anyway, to get any bigger. But I don't know if there'd be a buyback, or, I mean, you ban the sale, but then a buyback or something. I can't see the cops that are confiscating them. But I just had one quick comment on the 18 to 21 thing. If it's a right in the Constitution, I think you're going to run into the Supreme Court problem, because it's a right under the Second Amendment, not like alcohol, where there's actually nothing in there. So I think that, you know, why should an 18-year-old, once they are of age, be banned from a constitutional right? And I'll take my comments off there.
Jimmy, thanks for the call. His second point there, James, go ahead.
No one's ever challenged, at least I don't know they've challenged, the fact that you have to be 21 to buy a handgun. If that's appropriate, a 21 minimum for handgun, I see no reason why it would be unconstitutional to require an age of 21 for a long gun.
Jimmy, thanks for the call. And Jimmy says, you know, he's fine with 5 rounds in his 30-06. Is there a number you'd want to see, James, as a cap for ammunition capacity?
Well, going by the practice of many states that have imposed these bans, 10 is the maximum. 10 is the limit. I'm not sure. I mean, the lower the number you have, the more resistance you're going to have to such an act or an attempt to pass something. So 10 as a maximum seems to be a reasonable number. And it's certainly enough for people who want to use the weapon for hunting or as self-defense.
Thanks a lot for that call. James, you're skeptical about a number of the measures that people float around out there. If Congress came to you and said, all right, we're going to work together, James, and we want your, you know, top 3 list, what kind of things would you offer them when it comes to preventing mass killings with firearms?
Sure. First of all, I'd raise the age, not just to 21. I'd actually like this to be 25 if I had my brothers, but definitely 21 for both handguns and rifles. Secondly, limit the size of high-capacity magazines to 10 rounds at most. And then third, as I mentioned, have a much more thorough background check system, such as the permit to purchase, where local law enforcement can look at a variety of things in making a decision whether someone should have a permit. You know, for example, the FBI in their NICS system, the background check system, wouldn't know, for example, if the police had been to a certain address because the mother keeps calling that her son is acting out. But a local cop would. So I think that local agencies can make better decisions about who should have a right to have a gun and who should not. So those three things, permit to purchase, limit on the size of magazines, and raise the age for purchasing.
And very briefly, I know there's talk like, well, can't we figure out who is likely to do these kind of shootings? Just briefly, can you touch on the difficulty of profiling for who might be the next mass shooter?
Sure. In the aftermath of mass shooting, we see all those yellow flags that were missed. They're really yellow flags because they turn red once the blood is spilled on them. There are countless Americans who write ugly things on the internet, who are lonely, isolated, angry, who have all the characteristics that we often see in these shooters, but will never turn their angst into action. The problem is trying to identify them. The overwhelming majority of them will do nothing. And if we try to identify them, one, what are we going to do with them if they haven't committed a crime? And secondly, we'll have a large number of false positives. Predicting the next mass shooter is literally impossible, unfortunately.
James,
it's a rare event. That's the only silver lining here.
James, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
My pleasure.
That's James Allen Fox, professor of criminology, law, and public policy at Northeastern University. He talked with us about the idea of bans on assault weapons, the 1994 ban on those weapons, whether other ideas could do more to save lives today. You could still let us know what you think about these various proposed regulations or what safety measures you think should be put in place. You can email ideas@wpr.org. That's ideas@wpr.org.